on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier, and as the season moves on, road games get tougher and tougher. Oh,
there's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
These two teams are spent. Letang in his own zone. Headman pass to the far side for Malkin. Marches in. Malkin trying to go inside and out. On Truba. Send it out in front of shot. They score! Guess who? Sidney Crosby on his night will win it for Pittsburgh. 3 points tonight here for Sid the Kid. Make it 1,002 in his career.
And that from Thursday night, a very fitting end to what was a tremendous hockey game between the Jets and the Penguins. Sidney Crosby depositing the overtime winner past Connor Hellebuck, his 31st on the year, giving the Penguins a 4-3 victory. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're going to get you set for a very busy weekend of Winnipeg Jets hockey.
Are you awake, Drew?
I'm awake. This is nothing. I was up long before my alarm was this morning, let me tell you.
Because I'm not.
I know, because you're completely asleep. You're actually still wearing a nightgown and a night hat. Which
yeah,
is
if you get anything half intelligent out of Dave and I, then you know that's probably pretty good.
Yeah, but you could say that most days.
Yeah.
Most shows.
Yeah,
that's
true.
It
doesn't matter if it's at 9 in the morning or 7 o'clock at night.
Very low bar we're trying to achieve here. That voice, of course, is that of Ezra Ginsberg. He's the man on my left, the man on my far left, still rubbing some sleep out of his eyes over there is Dave Minuke. And you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. As I was saying, the Jets and the Montreal Canadiens, it's an afternoon of fair in Montreal, a 1 p.m. puck drop. You can hear that game live on TSN 1290. And then a quick turnaround as the Jets head to Ottawa for a tomorrow. And I'm not sure if that's afternoon or if that's late afternoon or if that's early evening. I believe a 4 p.m. Winnipeg start as the Jets head down to the nation's capital, meet the Ottawa Senators for the first time this season. Before we look forward, we're going to go look back. Thursday night, the Jets and the Penguins, a historic night at PPG Paints Arena as Sidney Crosby gets point number 1,000 on his illustrious career.
By the way, when did it become PPG Paints Arena?
I'm not sure.
I think it was last year.
I don't pay attention. These arenas change their names so often,
yeah.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah. I'm willing to call it the Igloo, really. PPG Paints doesn't pay me. I'm pretty sure they're not in Winnipeg. I've never seen a PPG Paints location. So if you want to call it the Igloo, because that's always what it is, because, well, you know, Sudden Death made it the Igloo. Sudden Death, the movie, of course.
Right.
It's the Igloo as far as I'm willing to go.
And it seems like, Drew, it's certain arenas. Like, I feel like it's like Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Florida's changed the name of their arena a bunch of times.
These companies keep going bankrupt, I think. I think that's what the problem is. So they keep going bankrupt, so they have to find new sponsors to name the arena after. But, you know, that's probably not... I don't really pay attention. Sometimes
I really miss the
called.
Blockbuster Arena.
That was where in Sunrise, because when they were owned by Wayne Huizenga.
I don't know. I'm just talking about companies that went bankrupt.
Yeah, Blockbuster definitely did. I think there's still 14 Blockbuster locations in the U.S. Yeah, I was listening to Howard Stern, and that's what they said, that there's still 14 locations or so. In any event, the Penguins and the Jets.
I'll go get a movie after the show, Drew.
There you go. You go do that. The Penguins defeat the Jets by that 4-3 margin. Started off very poorly for the Jets as the Penguins jumped out to that 1-0 lead 59 seconds into the game. Then about 6 minutes later or 5 minutes later, Sidney Crosby gets that magical point 1,000, and it's 2-0 for the Penguins. And you're thinking, oh boy, this could be a long night for the Winnipeg Jets in an arena that they've had, well, historically the entire franchise has been horrendous in. It turned out to be a fantastic hockey game. And sure, the Jets needed 2 points, and they only got one. But if you sort of can take your brain away from the standings for a couple minutes, that was just a tremendous hockey game to watch between the Penguins and the Jets on Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm safe in saying that that was one of the best games of the year for the Jets. And as you said, Drew, this point in the season, I mean, you don't get a point, so it's very you don't get 2 points,
right.
So it's very disappointing. And you're in a situation where your chances of making the playoffs are not very good, considering that you don't have very many games left and you're chasing a bunch of teams that have games in hand. But I thought really from the midway point of the first period on, the Jets were the better team. And you're right. Chris Kunitz puts Pittsburgh up 2-0. Crosby gets his 1,000th point. And it looks like, okay, well, the Jets are going to lose this one 3-0 or 4-0 here. And I thought that they reacted really well to that goal, and especially Blake Wheeler. Because Sidney Crosby, we all saw it, he steals the puck from Blake Wheeler in the Winnipeg zone, gets it over to Chris Kunitz, and Connor Hellebuck can't get over in time as Chris Kunitz one times it past Hellebuck. And I thought that Wheeler's line was really the one that was driving the bus for the rest of the game. And Dustin Byfuglien as well. I thought Dustin Byfuglien had a really good game, and, you know, that's tough to say because, you know, certain points in his own defensive zone, he was making mistakes and didn't look very good. He coughed up the puck on the first goal there. He kind of bobbled it, was trying to get it out, and he was battling, and that led to Evgeny Malkin's goal to put the Pens up 1-0. So overall, I mean, we know that the Jets are more successful against skilled teams because the Jets are a skilled team. And, you know, Pittsburgh has had more success against the Jets over the years, especially in their arena. But we've seen many high-scoring games in the past. And really, guys, Marc-Andre Fleury, to me, was the difference. Oh, I don't know how – I really don't know how you trade this guy. And I realize that Matt Murray – you know, has become, you know, the future number one goaltender there. And, you know, they lost last night to Columbus. But the way Marc-Andre Fleury played, I mean, we saw it, you know, the double pad stack he made towards the end of the second period.
He was
phenomenal, Drew. Mm-hmm. And that overtime was really exciting. And, you know, a couple of untimely penalties really hurt the Jets at the end of the third there that allowed the Penguins to tie it up, Phil Kessel getting the goal. But absolutely back and forth. The amount of speed and skill that you have seen between these two teams over the years is incredible. And now with the Jets with Patrick Laine, I mean, it's even more skill. So an amazing effort for the Jets, because as you mentioned, the first 5 or 6 minutes, it was all Pittsburgh. But after that, I thought the Jets responded really well and were fighting really down to the last minute.
It's not just the Jets who haven't had success against the Penguins.
Thrashers.
It's
the rest of the league.
I'm just saying it's the rest of the league. The Jets have been so Penguins have been so dominant that they were 23-0-0 this season when leading after two periods. And going back, the Penguins broadcast mentioned this. I saw Rick tweet it. Was that the, I think they were 63-0-0 when leading after two since like 2015. So this isn't a Penguins team that when they've got a lead gives it up very easily. Mm-hmm. And I thought the Jets, you know, I'm with you guys. I thought after 2-0, I thought, well, this one's over and this is going to be a long night for Winnipeg and fans who were watching the game. But they dug deep, and Connor Hellebuyck obviously is going to want to have that first goal back. I mean, that's a bad rebound to give up. You don't want to be doing that, and he acknowledged that after the game. I thought it was somewhat of a phantom penalty call on Byfuglien in the third period when he got that call against, I think it was a holding on Sidney Crosby. I mean, I don't know. I just thought in a game that close, why are you calling that penalty? Like, to me, I don't know. I just didn't think that penalty was very valid. And then,
the fact, Dave, that you could have argued Malkin should have been kicked out of the game.
We're going to get to that.
Like, that'd probably be my last point about the game is that, like, I just don't understand how A, that's only 4 minutes, and B, and we'll talk. Obviously, we'll talk about this, but how is that not supplementally disciplined? Because, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm looking and I think to myself, Wheeler doesn't have the puck. I know he's reaching for it, but he doesn't have it. And I know it's a fast game. He doesn't have it. He's reaching for it. The principal point of contact is Malkin's shoulder to the Wheeler's head, and Malkin jumps. So those are really all the things that
the checklist.
Yeah, exactly. Should have gone off. And to be honest with you, like, even if they didn't suspend him, I mean, I'm sorry, but I think that merits a phone call or some investigation from the league. And for the league to say that there's nothing forthcoming on that, we'll get to that in a sec. But so that to me was just – I think that kind of got the Jets going, though. Like, and again, Ezzie's right. Like, it was an interesting game in the sense that it was a very physical game. And the advantage, of course, the Jets had, we shouldn't forget, is the fact that they knocked out two Penguins defensemen.
Sure.
So Pittsburgh's playing a lot of that game with only 4D, which, of course, for the Jets is a boon because, you know, especially when Olli Maatta is one of the defensemen who has to leave the game and now has have to have surgery for, you know, had surgery and is out for 6 weeks, that's a big loss for Pittsburgh. So, I mean, a lot of things came together. And you know, look, you can't say moral victories because you guys know that, as everybody knows, that this Jets team needs points. But they could have easily folded. They fought back. They got it into overtime. They had the lead, of course. So I mean, it was a good way to start the road trip.
If this was a game that was being played in November, you'd say this is a great building block game.
Yep.
The problem is this game was being played in February, and they don't have an opportunity. They don't have time for building block games at this.
There's
point.
Lots of positive. Paul Postma gets his first goal of the year, and Blake Wheeler and Dustin Byfuglien, they had rough starts to the game. And they finish really strong, and those are the leaders of your team, right?
Yeah.
Buff takes a couple of penalties there. The penalty that cost them at the end of the third period there, the holding penalty on Crosby, as Dave mentioned, it wasn't the best call. But it's funny, Dave, you mentioned the physicality of the game. The play on Justin Schultz, Dustin Byfuglien doesn't even really hit him that hard. I guess when you're 260 pounds and you're up against a guy that's not as big as you, you know, there's a bit of a size mismatch.
Yeah.
But it didn't really seem like anything nefarious happened there, Drew. But when you're talking about the hit on Evgeny Malkin, Carey Fraser was on Hustler and Lawless yesterday and said it should have been a 5-minute major plus a game misconduct, let alone a possible suspension.
I mean, we talked about it on Wednesday's midweek show with Josh Smith from Scouting the Refs, and we were talking about the NHL's, let's call it, questionable supplemental discipline policy this year. Because there's been no rhyme or reason for a lot of the decisions they've made. Things that, from my perspective, would have been clear suspensions last year, 2 years ago for sure, aren't warranting anything else. And so this one, if this is 2 years ago when really we were talking more about headshots and it was more in the forefront, I think Malkin gets probably a game or something along those lines. But you're right, Dave. To get absolutely nothing, that's a good, clean play. We want that in the game. Because that's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're saying by not talking to him at all. It doesn't make any sense. And, you know, a lot of people are now saying, well, it's because he's Evgeny Malkin.
Drew, forget the conspiracy theories.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Look at.
It doesn't matter, though. It's a suspendable play.
Oh, yes. It's clearly a suspendable play. But you look at the other one that comes to mind recently is Brad Marchand and his two slew foots. Well, Brad Marchand's a 40-goal scorer in this league. And sure, he might not be a superstar in Evgeny Malkin's at Evgeny Malkin's level. But you do wonder if the NHL and their discipline policy isn't, you know, two-tiered, if there isn't different discipline depending on how good the player is, but clearly the evidence in front of us makes you wonder.
The other thing to factor in is it's not like he hit a scrub. He hit the Jets superstar. So to me, again, I just think you have to take the names off and just treat the play as if it's the play, you know, and just hold the play accountable for what it was. And in my mind, that was a suspendable play.
Let me ask you this. It seemed like it was a much more physical game than we've been seeing the Winnipeg Jets play, really, for the majority of this season.
Drew, by the way, I'm a big Malkin fan. I mean, I'm not saying that Malkin is a dirty player.
No.
But that was a blindside hit to the head.
We're in agreement.
And you know, I like fighting in hockey. I like the physical side of stuff. But a dirty play is a dirty play.
And he should have been. Nobody is disagreeing that there should have been, that it should have been a 5-minute major, that there maybe even should have been supplemental discipline as a result.
Carey Fraser knows more about refereeing than anybody in this room, and he said he should have been kicked out of the game.
That's right, and given supplemental discipline.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, Ted, and we're going to have Ted on later, wrote about it in his article, said that the Penguins' own staff, when he was walking out of the arena, were talking about how Malkin's hit was a high hit and most likely a suspendable hit.
Checkbox.
And again, that just because it's the staff doesn't mean anything, but you'd think that they're a little more biased to give their guy the leeway. And
anybody sees that and knows that that's not a hit that supposedly NHL wants in the league, except for the fact that they seem to want that in the league now.
The reason why that's so important, Dave, is because he assisted on the game-winning goal.
I know.
Right?
Exactly. So. It's an insult to injury, right? The guy who, he doesn't get the goal, but he basically does. Yeah, he sets it up. So
taps it in, puts it on the tee for Crosby to tap in.
How gassed was Ehlers, though, on that breakaway? I mean, that, no, No, it was just hilarious because you never see Ehlers go at like anything less than like warp speed, and he like looked behind him like,
"How much time do I have?"
He's like, "I'm exhausted." That overtime was exciting.
Can I go on a line change while on a breakaway? Is what he was thinking.
If anybody doesn't think the Penguins are the favorite to repeat as Stanley Cup champions, then you weren't watching that game because I mean the Jets. They outplayed the Pens for a big part of that game, and they still didn't end up with the 2 points. And sure, there were other factors involved there, but I mean, this Penguins team, is there any deeper team in the league? I don't know. Maybe Washington, maybe one or two other teams, but top to bottom, this is a fantastic hockey team.
It was a great game between the Jets and the Penguins. The Jets, of course, look to build on that result this afternoon at 1 o'clock when they face the Montreal Canadiens. When we come back, we run down the Jets' injury situation. It's getting long. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, Andrew, upper body, day-to-day, but not, I guess he's longer than day-to-day, he's not on the trip. Toby Enstrom had surgery this morning, and it was successful, and we're hopeful for a 2 to 3 week return. Tyler is back and rehabbing from his surgery. Mark O'Donnell skates non-contact. The next phase, you'll know when he's moved it. He won't be wearing orange, and then so he's closing in on return.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice giving an injury update one more time. That was pretty quick. Andrew Kopp, quote, day-to-day, but not on the road trip, which should tell you that he's more like at least out 1 week, closer to two once you factor in the bye week. So you won't see Andrew Kopp at least until the team returns from their bye week, which comes up after Tuesday's game in Toronto. Toby Enstrom underwent surgery on, I believe, or what has been reported to be a, quote, nagging foot injury. He's out 2 to 3 weeks. Again, you won't see him till after the bye week, maybe a week or so after the bye week ends. Mark O'Donnell and Andre Pavlik are both skating with the team. They're on the road trip. So possible that you might see one or either of those two between now and the game in Toronto on Tuesday night. And Tyler Myers, he's undergoing rehab back in Winnipeg after his groin surgery. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
I hope Justin Schultz was wearing his mouth guard yesterday.
Well, after Dustin Byfuglien put him into
two nights ago.
Put him into the sideboards there, you're saying? Yeah, fair point. So the Jets, a little bit banged up right now. You know, they have what you would describe as five regulars, if you consider Mark O'Donnell a regular or not. Five regulars that are out of the lineup, I guess, if Andre Pavlik's a regular or not as well. I thought that I was surprised on Thursday how the defense was able to hold up without Toby Enstrom. I thought that was going to be a complete and total tire fire, particularly being on the road as the visiting team, not able to get, you know, the line matchups you wanted. But
last change,
that's what I'm saying, yeah. So on Thursday I was, let's say, cautiously optimistic based on their play, that this might not end up being what completely derails the Jets season.
Right, and I agree with you. And, I mean, we know Tyler Myers has been out since November. We know that he's not coming back anytime soon. He'll most likely be back at the end of March, early April. And they already had Mark O'Donnell out of the lineup, Drew. So we should mention they recalled Brandon Tanev yesterday. And, I mean, when you look at the injuries, the most significant ones are Andrew Kopp and Toby Enstrom. And Andrew Kopp, I think, has been playing probably the best hockey of the season as of late. Certainly on that last homestand, he was very good. And when you look at where the Jets are right now on the road with two games coming up, they're really going to miss a guy like Toby Enstrom, Drew. And you mentioned the defense, and you had Paul Postma and Mark Stewart paired up. They actually only played 7 and 8 minutes respectively, with Mark Stewart picking up a little shorthanded ice time. But Paul Postma had a great game, and we know he got that goal. But you're relying a lot, again, on Dustin Byfuglien, who led all defensemen in ice time, 30-plus minutes. You know, Jacob Trouba, 28 minutes. I have no problem with that. You know, Ben Chiarot, I thought, was probably the nicest surprise on defense for the Jets. He logged 24 minutes of ice time. He was paired up with Dustin Byfuglien. I thought Chiarot and Byfuglien, even though, you know, they were out there for a couple of goals, Dave, I thought, you know, when you're talking about the Penguins, the best offensive team in the league, I thought they held up pretty well. And, you know, Josh Morrissey, he actually only played 18 minutes and 54 seconds of that game. But I thought, again, quietly is just very effective. And so, I mean, they're really going to miss Toby Enstrom, like I said, Drew, because you have back-to-back games here against Montreal and Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And then Andrew Copp, because he's been playing very well, you know, in a top-six role. So, you know, hopefully you get Marco Dano back, you know, sooner rather than later. Maybe he even gets into the lineup this weekend. I wouldn't expect it, but, I mean, it's possible.
I think what's working against him more than anything is the fact that the Jets won't have had any practice days.
Right.
Because usually, you know, a coach will wait till a player has a full practice under their belt, particularly one who's coming off of he practiced wearing the non-contact jersey. Rare is an occurrence where you see a player go straight from wearing a non-contact jersey back into a game. The Jets canceled practice yesterday in Montreal. Obviously, there's no morning skate or anything this morning with the 1 o'clock start, and then they go on the back-to-back to Ottawa, so there's no practice day there. Maybe they practice Monday in Toronto. I'm not sure of the schedule yet for next week.
Yeah, I would say the earliest you're going to see Marco Dano would be against the Leafs, possibly. And even then, like, it sounded like before they left, Coach Marie said, yeah, he's coming along for a skate. Meaning, like, he's going to be here. He's going to skate with the guys. He's going to get that, you know, possible, because obviously they were supposed to have a practice on Friday. Mm-hmm. So maybe he'll get in. And you know, his whole philosophy is, you know, need to get a couple of good tugs in practice before he's going to put you into the lineup, as we saw with Drew Stafford. So I wouldn't expect. And Marco Dano is actually pretty consistent with what he said. I think, you know, back in, it was the end of December when Coach Marie said, it'll be 6 to 8 weeks, or 6 to 9 weeks, I believe is what he said for Dano. So he seems to be right on pace with what the prediction was when the injury first occurred. Tobias Enstrom was interesting because, you know, originally, first of all, nobody really even noticed it. We were at the game, and I mean, none of us really saw the slash that took him out of the game like a minute 22 in or a mm-hmm. minute 24 in, but... So that was somewhat surprising, and I didn't think it'd be that significant. But then, you know, the next day we're told by the coach that, you know, there's swelling and they have to wait for the swelling to go down before they're going to really be able to give this a proper assessment. And then sure enough, we find out that, you know, he had surgery on, what was it, on Thursday, I believe? So
Wednesday,
and
I think.
Yeah. Whatever. So well, I think the team said it was like Wednesday, and then Coach Marie said it was this morning. So anyway, it doesn't matter. So the fact is that, and the reason they said they went with the surgery route was they said they could have rehabbed it for 2 to 3 weeks, but there was no guarantee that it would be fixed and he'd be healthy, and they may need to go the surgery route anyways. So
let me just interrupt you there for a second, Dave. It's ironic that they say that, given the Tyler Myers situation was they thought they could rehab it for, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, and then that 2 to 3 weeks turned into 2 to 3 months, and then they decided that they needed the surgery for Tyler Myers.
Yeah, no, it's a good point,
maybe
Drew.
Once bit, twice shy.
And that's why I think that Toby Enstrom really is the one that hurts this team the most. Cool. And that's not to take anything away from Andrew Copp, because I think we'd all agree that Andrew Copp has had a great second NHL season, especially when you consider that he started the season in the AHL, right, Dave?
Yep.
So, and he was playing with Scheifele and Wheeler there. So Andrew Copp's been fantastic. But when you already don't have Tyler Myers, and you haven't had him since early November, when you're talking about Toby Enstrom and Tyler Myers, you're talking about minute munchers on defense, right? So now, as we talked about, Ben Chiarot is a guy that's going to be expected to play more on that left side. But when you're talking about, you know, going back-to-back against Montreal and Ottawa, I mean, these are two playoff teams in the East. Montreal might be struggling a little bit here, but both of these teams can score goals. So, I mean, you're really going to miss these veteran defensemen on a road trip like this. So, I mean, you know, guys like Paul Postma, Mark Stewart, they have to chip in as much as they can. And Buff and Trouba, I imagine, are going to be playing 27, 28 minutes a game. But, you know, you wonder in a back-to-back situation if these guys are going to start to tire out a little bit.
Well, you have to assume that they're going to, because to your point, because, you know, you thought that maybe given the circumstances, maybe the loss of Enstrom might see Postman Stewart's minutes go up a little bit. They didn't. They barely cracked the combined 15-minute mark.
And I do think you're going to see Postma and Stewart play a little bit more. They have to play more than 7 or 8 minutes, Drew.
Well, maybe against this Montreal team they might be able to, because the Habs, we know their biggest drawback is depth scoring.
Yep.
So that, you know, their third and fourth lines don't really scare you offensively. Or
they're having trouble with primary scoring right now.
So historically, they haven't scared you a ton. So maybe you can sneak them into up to, you know, a 10-minute mark each, which isn't, I mean, that's another 90 seconds for Mark Stewart and another, you know, 2 minutes for Paul Postma. But it really does go to show just how little confidence, all due respect, the Paul Maurice and the Jets coaching staff have in their bottom pair defense if they can't even crack the lineup. I mean, at this point in time, why not give a shot to a guy like Julian Melchiori? You know, if you only trust Mark Stewart or Paul Postma to play 8 minutes a game, why not go with your seventh defenseman and see what he can bring, at least on a one-off or two-off basis, because it can't be less than that. And you never know, maybe you're going to catch a little more lightning in a bottle. Maybe you can get him up to the 10 or the 11-minute mark when you know that, you know, Stewart and Postma haven't cracked 10 minutes. And I mean, it's been a while. That just seems to be the max that Maurice is willing to play him. That would be my thoughts, is when I give it a shot.
When Melchiori was with the Jets last year, he averaged about 13, 14 minutes. So, I mean, it's interesting. Melchiori isn't, I mean, he's not going to be a top pairing defenseman in the NHL, unlike what he is in the AHL. But he's serviceable. I mean, and he's a hard worker. I mean, he's not a flashy, he's a stay at home guy. He's a steady guy. You know, he's a third pairing guy. I mean, like, in the sense that he can fill a third pairing role if need be. So I'm a little bit surprised, but you know, again, right now they clearly aren't. They're clearly riding their top four heavily, and that's what their plan is. And they'll do that until they can't, obviously. And then if need be, they can offset Melchiori into the lineup if they find that something's happening with Stewart or Postma.
When we come back, Ted Wyman joins us from Montreal. He's on the road trip for the Winnipeg Sun. We speak to Ted ahead of the Jets and the Habs later on this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Saturday morning. We are your Saturday morning cup of coffee here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Ted Wyman. Ted covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. He joins us from Montreal. Ted, good morning, and thanks for doing this.
Morning, fellas. How are you?
Doing very well, Ted. How about yourself?
Not bad at all.
That's good. Worst places to spend an off day than Montreal.
You got that right.
Yeah. Ted, obviously we're going to talk about the Jets and the Habs and this crucial four-game road trip that the Jets are in the midst of prior to their bye week. But before we look forward to today in Montreal and tomorrow in Ottawa, I want to look back briefly on Thursday in Pittsburgh, and we'll talk about the Malkin hit on Wheeler coming up. But before we talk about that hit specifically, the Jets seem to play a much more physical game on Thursday night than we're used to seeing this season. It was sort of harkened back to the days of a couple of years ago when they were a roller derby team that hit everything that moved. Did you like seeing the Jets employ a more physical style on Thursday night? And you think that's something that they should maybe look at incorporating more often than the purely skilled team we've been seeing for the majority of this season?
Honestly, that is a great question, because everybody in the Eastern Conference thinks that's who the Jets are. They're used to seeing the Jets that way in past seasons. And talking to some of the media before the game, they said, well, the Jets are a big banging team. That's what they're going to do. And then they went out and did it against the Penguins. And you know, so they look like that team again. And Pittsburgh is not a team that handles that well. That's not, you know, in order to beat that team, you have to go out and bang them. It didn't actually work. They didn't win that game, but they certainly had a chance to win it, and it made a lot of sense. I don't think the Jets can do that every single night. I don't think they're built for that now, but it definitely works for them. I'm talking to Matthew Perreault before the game. He said that's exactly the game plan we need, and they went out and they did that, and it definitely gave them a chance to win that game.
Ted, it wasn't an easy night for Blake Wheeler on Thursday. He coughs up the puck to Sidney Crosby, which led to the Penguins' second goal and Crosby's 1,000th career point. And then he's the victim of the headshot from Evgeny Malkin. In your opinion, how does the NHL not suspend Malkin for that play?
I don't know if you read my column in the Sun today, but that's pretty much what it was. How do you not suspend him? I just don't think it's right because headshots have to be taken out of the game. He left his feet. He hit a player who never even touched the puck. He hit him principal point of contact in the head. If you're not suspending that, what are you suspending? So I can't say too much more about that. That's really what I think.
Teddy, you're in Montreal, as the boys touched on, and you saw the first practice for Montreal. What was that like being there with three live TV cameras filming and packed to the rafters with fans? I mean, you know, we talked about how this Jets team is going to be, you know, they're there for Crosby potentially with his 1,000th point, and now Montreal, Claude Julien's first game as coach. So there's going to be a lot of pomp and ceremony this road trip.
Yeah, well, it's more than, yeah, you're right. This is an interesting road trip because you get 1,000th point with Crosby, you get what's going on here with Claude Julien, and you get
Austin Matthews.
You know, Lion A. Matthews.
Yeah.
In Toronto, so it's really very interesting. But it's bigger than even what happened at the Bell Sports Complex yesterday. This entire city is excited about Claude Julien. It's like a star player has returned to the team. It surprises me how much they love that man. And they really didn't like Michel Therrien. He was not a popular coach. And Claude Julien, I think, is certainly looked upon as maybe not so much a savior, but certainly a person who they do like, and everybody feels like this is a new season starting. Even Carey Price said that. So, first place team. That's the amazing thing about it. The Habs are in first place. They're a good hockey team. They've done well, but they have not played well lately. And I was talking to a few people yesterday, and they said even just watching, it felt like they were slumping their shoulders on the bench. It just looked like there was nothing there. And Therrien had no influence over that team anymore. And now you bring in a guy who's personable and a very good hockey coach. And I think people are very excited about the possibilities with Claude Julien in charge.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted joins us from Montreal, where the Jets and the Habs will do battle this afternoon at 1 o'clock. Ted, we were talking about this last segment. Obviously, the loss of Toby Enstrom, significant for the Jets' defense. This has been a defense that really has been rolling only four defensemen for the majority of the season. And then we see on Thursday night against the Penguins that neither Paul Postma or Mark Stewart are able to reach the 10-minute mark in minutes played. From your perspective, if Paul Maurice has, I think it's safe to say, let's call it minimal faith in Postma and Stewart, is it time to maybe see what a Julian Melchiori could do in the lineup at that point?
Yeah, I don't know if that would really make any difference. I don't know if he'd give Julian Melchiori any more time. You're right, though. Bufflin played over, or 30 minutes, a little bit over. Trouba was 27, 28. Like, those guys are getting an incredible amount of time, but you know, obviously the Penguins won that hockey game and they only had four defensemen the whole time. Chris Letang seemed like he never came off. This is the way teams play. The Chicago Blackhawks went to a Stanley Cup. They had four most of the time. I don't think that Julian Melchiori is going to make that much of a difference with this hockey team. So I don't see that happening. I think he's going to ride his main guys and he's going to see what they can do with that. Obviously, the Jets are not a good enough defensive hockey team, but they don't have any immediate answers that they can throw right in there to become better.
Ted, I wanted to ask you about the Sean Matthias, Adam Lowry, Joel Armia line. They were out there for the goal that was scored by Paul Postma. They've really stuck together quite a bit, even though the line blender has been out for Paul Maurice.
I guess he likes that line.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at that line, is it not just impressive what they've done this year, but you can kind of see that that's a line that might work for Paul Maurice going ahead to next year?
Yeah, and it's the reason I like that question is that you see people opposing media, let's call them, people who we talk to say, wow, Lowry is really good. I'm really impressed with him. And obviously the Jets have a decision to make when it comes to who they're going to protect in the expansion draft. I think that that line has been very good. They don't produce a ton, obviously. They do some. But it's definitely good to have a line of guys like that that you can trust, you can throw out there. And they do get the job done. And it's not all about the top six for this Winnipeg Jets team. So, yeah, I definitely think that Maurice is obviously a fan of that line. He's kept them together for months, and they're likely to stick together for quite some time.
Ted, you know, I've been taking looks at Jets' blocks of 10 games segments for all 60 games that they had played previous to today. And, you know, they were actually pretty disciplined this last segment. They only took 23 penalties, but they gave up 6 power play goals. And so the problem is, like, their penalty kill obviously isn't very good. Do you have any idea why this team with this much talent can't seem to kill penalties?
Yeah, 28th in the league. Hasn't had it. They haven't had a great history, Dave, in terms of killing penalties on this team and special teams in general. The power play's gotten a little better this year. I can't tell you. I can't answer that. I don't know exactly why they have problems with that. They don't have that shutdown defenseman, obviously. I don't think anybody would ever call Dustin Byfuglien a shutdown defenseman. He's a good defenseman. Trouba does a nice job back there. But, again, you know, there it happens in the third period against Pittsburgh. They play in a fantastic second and third period. The shot attempts that they were generating against Pittsburgh were unbelievable. They had about 50 in the second and third period. They were just fantastic in that area. But they, you know, take one penalty. Byfuglien takes a penalty, and Kessel puts them in the net. They end up losing that game. That is a real problem of concern for the Winnipeg Jets, the penalty kill, no question.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted joins us from Montreal, where the Jets and the Habs will do battle at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Ted, what do you make of Paul Maurice not deploying Patrick Laine on the 4-on-3 power play opportunity back at the game in Pittsburgh? I mean, he's your number one goal scorer. He has got a top five shot, top five release in the entire NHL. I have trouble believing another coach doesn't put Patrick Laine out on the ice in that situation.
I'm not even going to share my thoughts with you. I sat on an airplane yesterday with Mark Recchi, the former NHL player who works for the Penguins, and he asked me the same question you just asked me. How can you have a 4-on-3 without your sniper out there? And I was very surprised by it. I think Twitter was very surprised by it. Yeah, he should be out there. There's no question. I just don't understand it. And, you know, the next power play that came along, it was just a 5-on-4, but they had him out there for almost the whole thing. But it seems like almost coincidence that that happened. It's whoever starts the power play is out there most of the time. And, I got to say, I think Patrick Laine should be getting almost 2 minutes every power play, if he possibly can do it. He's not going to put guys out there who've just been on the ice, but you got to get the guy out there, especially in a 4-on-3 situation. With that shot, you know he's going to get a chance from that left point. I just think that absolutely is something that they should have done in that situation, and Paul Maurice has to try to make that happen from now on if he can.
Ted, I think we can all agree that we expect it to be Connor Hellebuyck for the Jets this afternoon versus the Habs. If Hellebuyck plays well today, is it possible that Paul Maurice uses him tomorrow against Ottawa?
Well, it is possible. It depends on Andrei Pavlik's health. I don't think that, you know, I kind of, Michael Hutchinson doesn't seem like a guy that he wants to go with. So, Pavlik did skate in Pittsburgh, but it was after the practice. So I guess we'll see today where he's at. But, I guess it's very possible if he plays really well. I thought he played quite well in Pittsburgh, but only after the first goal. That was a terrible goal. He said, I've got to have that. This is the NHL. That's all you really need to know about that goal. So, again, that almost sums up Hellebuck's season, though, doesn't it? You know, he hasn't really been there all the time. He certainly hasn't been top-notch NHL quality all the time. He's had flashes, and that's the reason why they've been using Andrei Pavlik as much as they have.
Ted, a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks about Brian Little and potentially getting him under a new contract. What are your thoughts on getting a player of Brian Little's caliber, re-signed for the Winnipeg Jets for the long term?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I think that Brian Little wants to be here, and I think as an organization, this team has to take that into consideration. I think they did it with Dustin Byfuglien. If a guy wants to be here, you want to try to make sure you keep that player because it's hard to sign players of that caliber otherwise. So I think that, if you can do it, if he wants to be here for the long term, you should. The only thing is that this team has lots and lots of contracts coming up that they have to make sure that they have money for. So it won't be easy, but I would expect them to try to make an attempt to do it.
Well, that's a bit of a preview. We'll talk about Brian Little's contract status coming up a little later on in the program. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun joins us from Montreal. Ted, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Go have yourself a Montreal bagel or something before game time.
Yeah, Ted, have fun on Crescent Street tonight.
Okay. Oh, my pleasure, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ted. It's head to break. When we come back, we'll preview the Jets and the Habs and the Jets and the Senators tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Grabbed off by Petrie, and he'll just lift this out at center. And this one comes to an end. So two goals early in the first, two goals early in the second period for the Montreal Canadiens. They chased Connor Hellebuyck in the first period on the third goal of the game for them. And they go on for a 7-4 win here at the MTS Center.
That was back on Wednesday, January 11th, one of the more depressing performances by the Winnipeg Jets this season, getting absolutely manhandled by the Montreal Canadiens. The Jets look for revenge this afternoon, 1 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Reminder, if you're looking for a place to catch this afternoon's game, Bernstein's Deli, big screen TVs throughout, great drink specials, great food, the whole nine yards. Check them out, bernsteinsdeli.com in the Cordon Village Mall. The Jets and the Habs, as I mentioned, 1 p.m. this afternoon, then they head down the road to play the Ottawa Senators tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. This Habs team is swirling with news, as earlier in the week, of course, as we touched on, they released Michel Therrien from his job. They hired Claude Julien, one of the best coaches in the NHL. It'll be interesting to see just how quickly this Montreal Canadiens team can get used to playing the Claude Julien system. Jets, they've been off for 5 days, the Habs. They're just back from their bye week. The record of teams coming off of their bye week in the Eastern Conference has not been good. The Jets look to try and take advantage of that this afternoon. It's going to be a difficult contest against a sort of a brand new and a refreshed Montreal Canadiens team.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same players on the ice, Drew, but I know what you're saying. It's a team with a new coach, and I think more so a fresh outlook on the rest of the season, mm-hmm. right? The Montreal Canadiens are one of those teams that could be active before the March 1st trade deadline when you consider, we talked about it in the first hour, I guess. We're still in the first hour earlier in the show. it's 7:45 in the morning here, guys. But, you know, the Habs have had trouble scoring goals. Yeah. And they've had trouble keeping the puck out of their own net. And, you know, there has been a lot of focus on Carey Price's save percentage and all of that. But, I mean, come on, guys. Carey Price is still one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. I'm not going to hear that argument, as far as I'm concerned.
You're not going to hear the argument that what?
That Carey Price is still not an elite goaltender.
No.
Carey Price has been
struggling.
He has struggled. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you look at what Carey Price did in the World Cup of Hockey, and you look at what he was doing earlier in the season. I mean, let's be honest, the Habs' defense in front of him has not been good. And, you know, I've said this before, I think at times the Habs' defense has looked slow. The average age of the Habs' defense is 29.7. I mean, and that includes old man Markov at 38 years old. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I mean, the Habs as a whole have been inconsistent. And, you know, the power play has been good. The penalty kill has been atrocious. So special teams, which was always a strength of their team, has been up and down. And that's kind of similar to the Jets. The Jets have had a good power play and a weak penalty kill. But the penalty kill has really hurt them this year. But more so, they just haven't had the balanced scoring. And that's something that they go out and they acquire Alexander Radulov. And then they acquire Shea Weber and they acquire Andrew Shaw. Now, Weber and Shaw Drew makes them a more physical team. And it makes them a more hard team to play against. And I think they are a harder team to play against. But Thomas Pulkanik has had a bad year. Brendan Gallagher hasn't put up the same numbers that you expect from him. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can go up and down the lineup, and they've had some injuries and all of that. Max Pacioretty's having another great year. Radulov has been incredible.
Yeah.
So
slowed down a little bit, but he's been he's been as much as they could have hoped
so,
for this season.
I mean, is this a team that just isn't performing to the expectations that we had for them earlier in the season, or is this just a team that is not as good as their early record indicated? They started the season off 13-1-1, and they've been a 500 team essentially since then. Yeah. So I mean,
500 points percentage, not 500 winning percentage.
Right. So when you talk about the Canadians, it's still a hard team to play against. They're still good in transition, and they have a lot of guys that can score. But more likely than not, if you're able to contain a Max Pacioretty or Alex Radulov, you'll take your chances. But they had Galchenyuk up on the top line centering Pacioretty and Radulov. So it's still a team with a lot of weapons. But, yeah, I mean, this is a team that has a new coach, and I would expect that they're going to come out firing because they haven't been good heading into the bye week, and now they're rested. So you know that they're going to be motivated today.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the lack of foot speed, especially on their back end. I think, Dave, you can speak to this, that's certainly an area I think the Jets would be looking to take advantage of. You know, Shea Weber is certainly their best defenseman, but he's not, you know, he's not as fleet of foot as he was earlier in his career. Alexei Yemelin was always physical, never really that fast. Markov certainly getting up there in years. So I think the Jets' speed, which is their best asset, would be something that they'd be looking to try and, you know, match up well against the Habs' back end.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the impetus for not skating yesterday. I think it's twofold. One, they played a very heavy game against the Penguins on Thursday, so you want to give your team a little bit of time to rest and recover. And in addition, we're at the point of the season where guys are carrying a lot of, you know, hurt and they're playing, but despite the fact that, you know, they're banged up and bruised up. So you give them some time to recover from a heavy game on Thursday. But another reason why is because you want your team, like you just spoke about, Drew, is the fact that you want your team to be able to use your assets against the opposition. And there's no point in working your team yesterday if it's going to leave them not as fresh for today, because of mm-hmm. course it's not a 7 p.m. start where they'd be able to like relax and have a easy morning skate. Instead, you're going to have a 1 p.m. start, so this team has to be ready to go right away.
Maybe have a Schwartz's sandwich.
Potentially have a Schwartz sandwich.
Yesterday, so, hopefully not as their pregame meal.
Yeah,
that might leave them a little logy or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So,
not sure how
so,
well that would digest.
So basically, you know, you're sitting there and you're saying, okay, well, this team can use that one of their biggest assets, which is their speed, from guys like Ehlers and Wheeler and that sort of thing, against Montreal, because as you talked about, they're not as fleet of foot. So that's going to be a big factor. But to me, it's the coaching bounce. It's how does Claude Julien's impact, because we've talked, you know, you mentioned at the start, Drew, teams coming off their bye week haven't had a very good first game.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I believe they're like, I don't think they even have a win right now. I think it's like 0 and in February, the teams that came off the bye week are like 0-5 or something like that, or 0-6. So a lot of teams aren't having success in that first game. Maybe there's a little bit of a holiday days still. They're still from, you know, maybe they were off in the sun and they're just not ready to play hockey. Now this Montreal team with everything, and the Jets perhaps could have had the benefit of that had not this coaching change taken place. And now because of this coaching change that's taken place, and as Ted talked about in the last segment, This whole city is galvanized. This whole city is – this team. If you don't think they're going to be amped up, this is going to be like a playoff-style game, I think, in terms not in terms of what we see necessarily on the ice. Potentially could be. But I think the crowd is going to be so pumped up and exuberant that it may be infectious for the team. And again, with everything that Claude Julien has been instilling, which is, I think someone was talking about, the first thing they worked on in practice was defense and their defensive plays. So you've got that team that's just – these guys are raring to go. They're chomping at the bit or champing, depending on your preference. And they're going to be a very big test for the Jets today.
Teams coming off the bye week are 3-9-1.
That's overall.
Overall.
Yeah, I was saying February. But yeah.
I know you were saying in February. So overall, they certainly struggled coming off the bye week.
I wouldn't read too much into that stat, considering this is the first year we've had the bye
week.
It
absolutely is. It's
and maybe guys in the first period, you're shaking off some of the rest.
But couple minutes.
These guys are professionals.
I know. Well, I mean,
they're going to get back into the flow of a game pretty quickly here.
The Habs getting Claude Julien, Dave, it's like acquiring a superstar player at the trade deadline. I mean, that's sort of the perception that exists around this hire of Claude Julien. Is Michel Therrien was not popular. It's clear his time had run out in the Montreal Canadiens organization. And then you go out, and it's not like you're replacing him with some sort of random interim coach, like the all due respect to Bruce Cassidy in Boston. Nobody's quite aware who Bruce Cassidy is. The Habs getting Claude Julien, well, that's like acquiring a top five NHL head coach.
When you're spending $4 million or whatever.
$5 million on him.
Yeah,
so it's a huge acquisition. So, of course, there is the residual excitement that surrounds that move. So, I mean, I think it is – there certainly should be some enthusiasm in the Montreal Canadiens lineup as a result of the move.
And, Drew, it's not just because Claude Julien has familiarity with the Habs and he's coached the Habs before. It's because he's coached in this division. Mm-hmm. He's coached many years in the NHL. He's coached at the international level. This is a top three coach in the league. So that's why I think Marc Bergevin has absolutely no problem pulling the trigger. And is it partly due to the fact that it's a bye week and he has time, to prepare and all that? I think absolutely. I don't think you make this move unless you have some days off to prepare.
I agree.
Only have one practice, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think
Claude Julien gets a lot of time to look at video about the team. And not that he doesn't already know the Montreal Canadiens, because he's been playing them 5 or 6 times a year for the last decade.
And if you think for a second Marc Bergevin doesn't make this move knowing that he needs wins now, then you're blind, because they need wins now. They are in danger of losing their standing in the playoffs right now. They're still leading the division, but, I mean, other teams have caught up to them, including the Bruins.
The Ottawa Senators, actually, are only 4 points behind the Montreal Canadiens with 3 games in hand. So the Senators are quietly creeping up on the Habs, which segues lovely into our next segment, because we're going to be joined by Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice, Dean Brown, to preview the Jets and the Senators, the second half of the back-to-back that goes tomorrow afternoon. So let's go to break. When we come back, Dean Brown, Ottawa Senators play-by-play man. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster Dean Brown. You can hear Dean's calls of the game on our sister station, TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Dean, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Morning.
How are you, Dean?
I'm doing well.
That's good. Obviously, the Jets and the Senators are going to do battle tomorrow afternoon in Ottawa. First meeting of the season between these two teams. Ottawa will make a return trip to Winnipeg later on in the year. You know, from the perspective over here in Winnipeg, Dean, this Ottawa Senators team is the most consistent playoff team that nobody's talking about in the NHL. They've really been in a playoff spot for the majority of the year. They're sitting comfortably in second spot in the Atlantic Division. I mean, albeit the Boston Bruins are close behind them, but the Senators have a number of games in hand. Why do you think nobody's talking about this Ottawa Senators team?
Well, I think anything as far as perspective goes has a great deal to do with expectation. You know, I think that when the season began and there were so many of the preseason prognosticators and so many of the magazines in our business that, you know, set up poolies and let you know what they think, you know, most of them picked Ottawa to miss the playoffs or to be the last place team in the East or to be the last place team in the league. So the expectation was from all of those people that this wasn't a playoff team. So I think that, you know, people have this idea that it can't be a playoff team because they've never thought of them that way. And they look at them as a team that might be in sixth right now, but will probably fail down the stretch. So they just don't think of them as a playoff team.
Dean, before I ask you my question, I just wanted to let you know I did pick the Senators to make the playoffs this year. So there was one person out here in Winnipeg that believed in the Sens. Sens defenseman Erik Karlsson, he had a career-high 82 points last year. He's got 47 points. He's on pace for around 70 points this year. How has Guy Boucher used him differently, and has this made him a better player?
Well, it all depends on your perspective, I suppose. He's kind of asked all the defensemen to play a different style from what they have in the past, and this team defends in a different way than it has in the past. And, you know, he's asked Erik to play less. Erik last year led the league in ice time, average ice time per game, and now I think he's fourth or fifth amongst defensemen. So he plays less, number one. But number two, you know, they all defend differently now. It isn't just Erik. You know, this team last year was out of the top 10 in scoring as a team for one day. It was one day in March last year where it was out of the top 10. The irony is, I think I would have to check today, but I think Ottawa is 23rd in the league offensively or somewhere there, yet they're in a playoff spot. So Erik's offensive numbers are down, as are almost everybody's on the team, because they play a different way now that's more defense first. And like I said before, Erik plays less now because the coach likes to distribute ice time in a different way from the last two head coaches. So all those things have changed the point total for Erik, but you're right in that there are plenty of people who think that now actually he's probably a better overall defenseman than he has been in the past because he's now being asked to play a more defensive role, where in the past he really hasn't been. In the past, the last two head coaches have really encouraged him to generate offense. So the team needed offense, and they needed him to generate it. So, you know, that's what they asked of him. Now this coach is asking something different, and he's doing that.
Dean, Erik Karlsson is the highest points getter for Ottawa. Seems like the majority of guys, it's spread out after that. Is that something that's been hard to sell to this team or, you know, a more unselfish game? Because they do have a lot of guys who can obviously put the puck in the net, but it seems like it's fairly evenly distributed amongst the players.
Yeah, so far it has not been a difficult sell from the coach to the players to get them to play this way, because when you miss the playoffs, you know, players are willing to listen and players are willing to change their games and players are willing to have someone preach a different song to them when you miss the playoffs. So being in a playoff spot all year and being able to win in games where it's a tight game or a one-goal game, being able to win those games now gets players to believe that, you know, giving up some of their offense for the team to be able to be in a better position is a good thing. The interesting thing is long-term, you wonder how that's going to go. You know, it worked for years for Claude Julien in Boston, for example. You know, it worked for Ken Hitchcock for years in St. Louis. But you do get to some points where, you know, players themselves, there's going to be individual players where there's no question that this will hurt them financially. You know, if your offensive numbers go down, your next contract is likely to be less, because in this league, offense is what gets you paid, you know, really, if you look at it. If you look at the difference between the higher paid players and the lower paid players in the league, it's basically statistical in most cases. You know, the better offensive players get paid more. So if you have a guy, for example, on this team like Jean-Gabriel Pageau, who last year, because of the injury to Kyle Turris and some other injuries along the way, ended up playing in the top six for a great deal of last year and was asked, and they needed him to play a more offensive role, and he did. Well, this year they need him, they want him, and they've asked him to be basically a shutdown setter, and he has. But there's no question it affects his offensive totals, and ultimately that will affect his contract. So like I said, right now it's been pretty easy for the coach to get them to buy into playing this way. But long term, you do have to convince guys this is the best thing for the team and ultimately the best thing for them.
Dean Brown, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dean is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play man on our sister station in Ottawa, TSN 1200. The Jets and the Sens do battle tomorrow afternoon. Dean, the Ottawa Senators goaltending, you know, Craig Anderson, we know that he's been with the team and away from the team, dealing with his wife and her courageous battle against cancer. Mike Condon is acquired from the Pittsburgh Penguins earlier in the year. He comes in and has been an absolute revelation. You know, Condon and Anderson together have really solidified this goaltending situation in Ottawa. How do you see the goaltending playing out over the next, you know, couple months as we get closer to the playoff stretch drive? Is this Craig Anderson's job, or is this going to be Mike Condon's job, do you think?
Oh, it's no question it's Craig Anderson's job. The switching back and forth now is just to allow Craig to get back into the swing of things. He basically missed 2 months of hockey, so he's basically going through his training camp all over again. So he might not play every game right now because they're trying to ease him back into things, but there's no question who the number one goalie on this team is. There's no goaltending controversy here. It's Craig Anderson, and when he gets up to full speed, I imagine that for the last stretch of the season, he'll play at least 80% of the games. That's not even a question in Ottawa. Condon has done a great job in filling in for Anderson, but the way they look at it is Condon has been filling in, not challenging for the job. He's been filling in on the job.
Dean, we talked about the goal scoring earlier, and Bobby Ryan, he's the highest-paid player on the Ottawa Senators. He's got 12 goals in 49 games. He was a healthy scratch earlier this season. How does head coach Guy Boucher get more out of a guy who was a former 30-goal scorer?
Well, I don't know how you get more out of him. You know, at the end of the day, a coach can only do so much, and a player has to produce. You know, like, the coach can't go out and push him to the net. The coach can't, swing the stick for him. He's put him in different situations to try and, pull more offense out of him. But to be honest with you, with Bobby this year, I'm willing to give him a bit of a pass, to be honest with you. He's had some injury issues this year. As a guy who scores goals, people whack you in the hand. That's the way it goes. So he's had some fractures and has had to freeze his hands for games and stuff like that. But the other thing is a more off-the-ice kind of thing. He's had a very, very difficult year. If you know Bobby's story, for people who don't, you know, when he was a young kid growing up just outside of Philadelphia, his father was arrested, and basically they went on the run as a family and escaped, went to California, changed their name, and eventually his father was caught and went to jail. But in all that time, basically, his mother was the one who basically kept everything together. And when his father went to jail, she worked three jobs so he could keep playing hockey. She got a job, a part-time job with an airline, so that she could get free tickets for him to fly with his traveling team. And you know, just for him growing up, his mother was everything. And during this off season, she wasn't feeling well, went to the doctor, and they found that she had terminal cancer and literally had weeks to live. So it's been a difficult season for Bobby in his life. You know, he's been greatly affected by it. At the same time, he's had the other side of the coin. He and his new wife had their first baby this summer. So he had one of the greatest joys and some of the most heartfelt sorrow you're ever going to have. And there's no question when you see Bobby, this year has affected him. So, it's one of those things where Bobby has never been a great skater, so I'm not sure he's ever going to be a guy who rings up big point totals in this league anymore because of the speed of this league. But I know he can produce more than he's producing now, but I'm just not sure that this year is the year that's going to happen because he's had to deal with some things that have been very, very difficult for him that have nothing to do with hockey.
Dean, we're approaching the trade deadline. Do you envision Ottawa being a buyer, a seller? Do you think they'll stand pat?
Well, to be honest with you, they won't be a seller, but they may be a buyer. But with Ottawa, I think it's going to end up being, if they make a deal, it would be a deal they would make at any time. It won't be, you know, a deadline deal as in they need this piece to get over the hump. You know what I mean? Like any of those big deals, when anybody deals with Ottawa, for example, all the stuff going on with Colorado right now, you know, anytime anybody deals with Ottawa, they want one of the young prospects. And Ottawa believes that they have a couple of really high-end, you know, young prospects. And that's what everybody wants. And so they're not going to give up a couple of first-round draft picks that they drafted in the last couple of years in Shabbat and what Colin White. You know, they're not likely to give up one of the young defensemen. They get, you know, every time they get a call, you know, somebody wants Cody Ceci, and that's not likely to happen. So I think if they are involved at the trade deadline, it won't be a prototypical deadline deal where they're trying to add something for the playoffs. It would be a deal that presented itself that they would do in July if it presented itself. You know what I mean? Like, it would be a deal, a hockey deal, that they would do anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't see them as being one of the teams that's going to be out there big game hunting, because I don't think as an organization, you know, they've looked at the history of this. And I know a lot of teams are looking at the history of this now. Adding a quote-unquote big-name player at the deadline rarely works out. It rarely happens that actually ends up pushing a team over the edge to be able to get something they couldn't get for themselves, because in this, you know, a great team sport, you can add a great player, but if he doesn't assimilate into your team, he just doesn't have the impact you think he's going to have. So you see more and more teams now shying away from those deals. And more oftentimes, the deadline deals you see now that do have an impact are for role players or for veteran players who fill in during the playoffs when somebody else gets injured, so they can fill a spot to maintain things, not to become the new leader of something. So I can see Ottawa standing pat and not doing anything, but if they do something, it would be a deal they would do anyway.
Dean, we'll let you go on this last question. Curtis Lazar, a former first-round pick of the Sens, he's got 1 point in 30 games. He had been a healthy scratch a couple weeks ago. What's his future? Is this obviously this is an asset right now that's significantly diminished. Is it time for a fresh start for Curtis Lazar? Can his career with the Senators still be salvaged?
That's a great question, and I can tell you honestly, I don't know what the answer is. You know, there's some people who believe that maybe he needs to be somewhere else to spark things, and there's other people that believe that, you know, he's still such a young player, you can't give up on him now, and his best days are ahead of him. I know one thing that does appear very obvious. You know, when they drafted him expecting that he would be a top six forward on this team at some point, and it really appears now that that's not going to happen. So there's some people in Ottawa who think that you've already wasted a first-round pick if you basically drafted a guy who's going to be a fourth-line center with a first-round pick. And I guess you can debate whether that's true or not. But I don't know what the ultimate answer to that is, but I know that right now, you know, the team is in a situation where they have great affection for this player. They really like him, and they don't want to give up on him. But they also are living with the fact that I don't think there's any expectation now that Curtis Lazar, despite being a high first-rounder, is going to be a top six forward. And so that is something you do have to live with as a team, unless things dramatically change.
Dean Brown is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster on TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Dean, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, boys, anytime.
Take care, Dean. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Dean.
Ted, to break when we come back. The Jets and the Maple Leafs will do battle on Tuesday, which means we're contractually obligated to talk about Patrick Laine versus Austin Matthews. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's coming up next on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Today, it would be Austin Matthews. He has been the most complete player amongst the rookie class so far. Keep in mind, Patrick Laine is 1 point ahead of Austin Matthews in the points race right now. He has a higher goals per game average. He can score a lot more goals than Austin Matthews. And he can win the rookie goal scoring race by, I say, 7 goals or more than Patrick Laine should be the rookie of the year.
Our TSN 1290 colleague Gary Lawless giving his opinion on the raging fire that will engulf Toronto on Tuesday. That being Patrick Laine versus Austin Matthews versus Mitch Marner for the Calder Trophy voting coming up at the end of the season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 20 minutes after 8 in the morning. And this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
By the way, I think Zach Werenski should be in that conversation too.
I think it is a little bit myopic to only view it as a Line A versus Matthews versus Marner conversation. Matt Murray, I think, should be in the conversation as well.
What hurts Matt Murray, though, is he's only played 31 games.
Right, and that he hasn't, because he's been splitting time with Mark.
I agree, though, with you, Drew. I mean, I do think he should get some votes, and he probably will get some votes, but I'm just saying, I think if he finishes the season and he's played 55, 60 games, then he's for sure a finalist, but because he'll probably end up finishing the season with, what, 40 or 45 games, that's only, you know, roughly half of a season. But absolutely, Matt Murray is still considered a rookie, and he's been very good for Pittsburgh.
Well, so as we sit here today, both Line A and Mitch Marner are tied with 48 points among rookies. Austin Matthews, 2 points back at 46. Line A, having played four fewer games after he missed that week or 2 weeks worth of action due to his concussion back, back in January where he suffered in Buffalo. Should the Calder Trophy be awarded strictly based on the points?
No.
Or should it be awarded based on the impact the player has had on their team?
I think you know the answer to that, Drew, is the latter. But as we know, especially when it comes to the Norris Trophy, for example, over the years, usually the players that have the most points are the finalists, right? Drew Doughty maybe is the exception. I mean, I still think Drew Doughty is the best overall defenseman. I remember when Richie was part of the show, he said that for years, that Drew Doughty was the best all-around defenseman. Now, that doesn't mean that Erik Karlsson of the Senators isn't an excellent defenseman, but a defenseman isn't just responsible for scoring. I mean, at the end of the day, the defenseman is more responsible for the way he defends, right? So when it comes to the Calder race, I think this is the best Calder race we've seen in a long time. And I think you can make a strong argument that Mitch Marner's the favorite right now. I think you could make a strong argument that Austin Matthews is the favorite right now. And I would make the argument for me, and I'm biased, that Patrick Laine is the favorite for the Calder Trophy. And the reason why I say that Patrick Laine is the favorite right now is because he missed those 8 games, as you mentioned, Drew. And he is tied for the goal-scoring lead amongst rookies, and he's tied for the points lead amongst rookies with Mitch Marner. So when you consider that if Patrick Laine had played even 5 more games, he would have more goals than Austin Matthews and have more points than Mitch Marner. Now, then it goes back to, well, is he the best rookie just because he has the most goals and the most points? Well, that obviously is a factor, but when you consider that all three of these rookies, when we're talking about Marner, Laine, and Matthews, they're all different players. I mean, Matthews is a goal scorer, but he gets his goals more so in the slot around the net. Laine is a pure shooter, a pure goal scorer.
Sniper, yeah.
Marner is more of a playmaker, a guy that can also put the puck in the net, but he's more a little bit more shifty, a little bit more, I think, dynamic offensively.
More of a setup guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if there is a favorite right now. I think that this is it really is a three-horse race. And we talked about Matt Murray. We talked about Zach Werenski. Another guy that we haven't brought up in a while is Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk.
Tkachuk has fallen. I mean, he's about 8 or 10 points off the pace.
I'm just saying that. I think, you know, he gets a little bit of a mention here. But really, it is a three-horse race. So right now, I mean, we have...
Do you put any stock into the fact that right now the Toronto Maple Leafs are a playoff team and the Winnipeg Jets are not? Do you think that should factor into at season's end?
Sure.
Let's say the Leafs are a playoff team and the Jets aren't, because that's the way it's looking.
Yeah, of course you have to. I mean,
Do you give bonus points to Marner and Matthews as a result of that?
Sure, we'll give them some bonus points, Drew. And when you talk about who Austin Matthews is playing with, it's the kid line, Zach Hyman and William Nylander, and then you've had Mitch Marner playing a second-line center role. Now Tyler Bozak is playing in that role. You have Nazem Kadri centering that top line.
Yeah, Marner banged up. We're not sure of his status. The Leafs are home to the Ottawa Senators tonight. Marner left that game against the Columbus Blue Jackets earlier this week after going heavy into the boards. I don't think he's going to play tonight. Not yet sure about his status for going forward, if he's going to be in the lineup on Tuesday when the Jets visit the Air Canada Center in Toronto.
Sorry, Marner on the wing, not at center. You've got Matthews, Bozak, and Kadri as your centers. But needless to say, I mean, the players that Laine has been playing with, you could say, okay, sure, you got Nikolai Ehlers. and you were playing with Brian Little, and you've been playing with Mark Scheifele, and you know, you've had some different centers there, so maybe, you know, Line A's quality of teammates is better. But, I mean, Ehlers is only in his second year in the league, guys. So it's not like, you know, Patrick Line A is playing with, you know, Sidney Crosby and Chris Kunitz. He's also playing with some young teammates as well. So I think the quality of competition is more similar than people want to admit. But certainly, Drew, the fact that both Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, and you could throw in Nylander and Hyman in there, the fact that, you know, it's the young guys that are driving the bus for Toronto.
Sure
Van Riemsdyk and Kadri and Bozak, I mean, those guys are having decent seasons as well. But, I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, it really is the young guys that have got the Leafs back into the playoffs.
Dave, does Laine need to sort of win this scoring race by leaps and bounds to win the Calder Trophy, or do you think that the voters of this trophy will maybe overlook a Toronto and or playoff team bias and give it to the guy in Winnipeg as opposed to the guy in Toronto?
I think they're more up against the Toronto bias because of, you know, Matthews is playing in Toronto, and I think as a result of that, he's got the focus of the Toronto media, which is going to be heavily voting, obviously, in most likely in his favor. You know, the Calder is awarded to the player who selected as the most proficient in his first year of competition.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't necessarily say, you know, does getting your player to...
That's very vague, by the way.
Yeah, it's definitely open, but I'm saying it doesn't necessarily say... You know, when I think MVP,
yeah,
I think to myself, okay, that's a player who gets his team into the playoffs.
Yeah.
If not for him, where would his team be? Well, you could really easily say, if not for Patrick Laine... I'm not suggesting the Jets are anywhere right now that they want to be, but where would they be without his 27 goals?
Yeah, and the Jets are 16-3-1 when he scores.
That's exactly. So, I mean, you're talking about a player who has a huge impact on his team. And I don't really understand this justification like, oh, well, Austin Matthews is playing with rookies. It's not like he's playing with rookies who are scrubs. He's playing with rookies who are very good. So you've got... you know, it's again, so to me, you throw that out because, like, as he said, when Laine's playing with Ehlers, it's not like Ehlers is a 10-year vet who has all these years. I mean, Ehlers still has things that he needs to change out of his game. There's things he's still learning. So, yeah, obviously, when you have a veteran like Brian Little, Mark Scheifele isn't exactly a grizzled vet at this point in his career. So, you know, there's definitely some advantage to Laine in that. My thought is that in order to kind of overcome the Toronto bias that will be seen in this voting, you know, Laine is going to have to run up the board. I think he's going to have to probably beat Matthews, I don't think by 7 or 8 goals. I think if he keeps up his pace, because the other thing to factor in is Laine's shooting percentage is insane. I mean, he's shooting at almost 20%.
Which a lot of people would tell you is not sustainable.
Sure, but the reality is that it's right now it's 6% higher than Matthews. That's a pretty significant amount. Patrick Laine has taken 140 shots. Austin Matthews has 196. So, you know, we're talking about guys who both have 27 goals. One guy's taken a significant number of shots, more than the other one, yet they're scoring, you know. So you have to factor that in because you could say, oh, they both have 27 goals. But
you're saying that Laine has been more efficient with his goal scoring because he's taken fewer shots.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, and again, like I said, the average for, I mean, and don't get me wrong, Austin Matthews' shooting percentage is very good. I think generally the league shooting percentage average is somewhere around 9 or 10, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, like, but look at Laine's number. I mean, when you have a shot like that, and, you know, we often talk about how good his shot is, and it's easy to forget because we see it so often. But, I mean, like, he literally does, and the Jets talk about it, the coaching staff talks about it. He has a chance to score every time he has the puck, which is why people get flummoxed when they don't see him on that power play.
When it's a 4-on-3 power play.
Right, because he's got such a lethal shot. So my thought is, if he wins this by – if he wins the points overall and he wins by 4 to 6 goals – then he realistically, based on the fact that he overcame the concussion and his play, I mean, and he's also done it with there's a lot of flair for the dramatic, right? The hat tricks, 3 hat tricks. We haven't seen a rookie have 3 hat tricks since Teemu Selanne had 5 and Erik Lindros had 3 in 92-93. So, I mean, again, I'm not suggesting that it's leaps and bounds. And again, we're talking a winger versus a center. But if you're asking me, you know, I think that it's Patrick Laine's to lose based on what he's been able to do and the excitement he's generated.
David Alter covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for TheAthletic.com in Toronto. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.